Welcome to Menopause Reimagined. I'm your host, Andrea Donsky. I'm a nutritionist for almost 20 years, menopause educator, and menopause researcher. I'm also the co-founder of WeAreMorphous.com, a company that helps to empower you to take control of your health and symptoms with nutrition, lifestyle, supplements, and research. Talking about research, I hope you had the chance to fill out our menopause surveys. We have 10 of them on our website now, and our most recent one is called Doctor Visits. We have hundreds of you that have filled out that survey in particular already, and just hearing your stories has been so incredible to me, and I'm so honored that you have shared them with me because your voice matters. So please join our movement and fill out our surveys, and I put the links to them below and the one to the doctor's visits below. Today, I'm speaking with Lisa Stokey. She's been concerned about food issues since being a young single mom in Iowa trying to source organic food for her four children. This led her to co-founding one of the most impactful nonprofit organizations in food and agriculture called Food Democracy Now, where they raised awareness on issues such as GMOs, glyphosate, the Farm Bill, organic standards, and more. After that, Lisa started working on solutions related to good food and health. Now, here's Lisa. Welcome to Menopause Reimagined, Lisa.
Thanks, Andrea. It's really great to be here.
So Lisa and I, for all of you who are listening, we've known each other a very long time. We basically met, oh my gosh, years ago, years and years and years ago. We were introduced by a mutual friend at a large trade show that both of us have been going to for many years in the natural and organic world. And we became such good friends over the years. And I'm so happy to have you on the podcast because when it comes to thinking about food integrity, food in general, how our food is grown, I mean, you are my go-to person because you have done so much and I've learned so much from you in the health and wellness world when it comes to farmers and organic farming and organic food and all of that. So I would love you to start with your story. And I mentioned in the bio that you came to this because you were trying to find organic food for your kids, but just give us a short little intro as to what got you interested in doing this in the first place.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for those kind words. I've learned a lot from you too, Andrea.
Oh, thank you.
I'm in my 50s now and, you know, going through menopause and all that, just like yourself, after having four kids and I now have a granddaughter. And my journey for this, it probably started when I was 19 though, 19, 20. And I started thinking more about organic food and I came at it from like more of an environmental perspective. And I grew up in Iowa, raised my four kids in Iowa. And a lot of people know, I think, that the Midwest is especially well known for, you know, food and agriculture and farming. But over, you know, probably from like the 80s, especially into the 90s, you know, chemical agriculture came in. And then, of course, genetically engineered crops and then a lot of monocropping, which is not good for our environment. It's not good for our health, our water, our resources and things like that. And so I started thinking more about that, you know, that just for my personal choices, I wanted to be able to contribute to a healthier environment and a healthier Iowa, where I was raised. And I have a, you know, rich farming background and all of that in my family. But then when my kids came in, I started thinking about it more from a health perspective. I still cared about the environment and all of that. But then when I had a young child, a baby, when I was 22, I started thinking, oh my goodness, I don't want to put, you know, chemicals into my child. And I want them to have nutrient rich food, of course, right? I think that's really common for us moms. Mm. And so that sent me off on this journey. And back in those days, we didn't have the internet, you know, so it was a challenge. And so I started driving to the co-op, you know, 2 hours and 4 hours away, you know, mostly in Minneapolis, where it's really rich in food co-ops. And I found information there and I found, you know, people who could, you know, help me understand all of this because we didn't have any of that where I lived in Iowa. And so then how I started my organization, I co-founded Food Democracy Now from Iowa in 2008. And the way that started after, you know, educating my community and holding dinners and things like that to help educate my community and give them good organic food. You know, we started Food Democracy Now because I remember one day I was looking out my window and right by my kid's swing set, there was somebody spraying chemicals and fertilizers. Wow. But it was on their property. And I was just like, there's no democracy here. I don't have any say so. I do everything I can to give my kids organic food and myself and all of that. But, you know, I still lived in a toxic environment. I mean, I hate to say that because I was very beautiful, but we do have a lot of chemicals, you know, in our water and our air and things like that. And so that was when I realized that we needed to do something more at a national level, if you will. And so we started working on that. I was always involved in politics, and that was the reason I was involved in politics, because I believe that if we changed our policies, we could change our agriculture and our food and have healthier humans. So that was how it started.
I love that. And I think, you know, so much of what we do comes from our passion, right? And as you're speaking, I'm like, okay, agriculture and farming and growing. And I wanted, for those of you who are listening and you might be thinking, you know, oh, you know, agriculture. And, you know, I just know I go to the store, I get my food and it ends up on my plate. But why is it important, Lisa? Why should we care as women who are in perimenopause and menopause, where our food comes from? Like, why does it matter to us? Because I, you know, many of us know we grow our food in the ground, the farmers grow it, and then it ends up on in the grocery store, and then it ends up in our plate or however. But why is it important that we really need to make this a priority to understand where it comes from, but also the type of food that we're getting?
Well, in a word, I would say because of the complexities that we're in now with our food system. And you know, we could, as you know, I mean, you're always telling me when you ask me a question, and I go down these like little rabbit holes all the time, and you're like, okay, bring it back. So I'll try to not do that. But I will say in a nutshell,
that's my media training, by the way. That's my media training of like concise, let's get to the point. But I love that. I love that, that you're actually just saying that.
Well, people like me, I need that, right? Because I've been a part of like a lot of these, you know, meetings and changes and, you know, at these more federal levels, I guess I will say, and also within the organic farming community. And so it's been really disheartening, you know, largely, I will say, because organic, back when I was saying, when I was like a young mom, that was driven by eaters and farmers. And so the standards were different. And then in 1992, the US government came in and they said, we're going to take over and regulating the standards. And there's a lot of different opinions on whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. And I won't get into all that. But where we're at now in 2024 is that the standards have changed so much that I call it the organic halo effect. So that people like what organic was and all these little companies and little farmers that were just really wanting to provide good food.
Grassroots
got bought up. Yeah. They got bought up by multinational corporations, and then they started lobbying at the meetings. And then before you know it, the National Organic Standards Board was stacked with industry interests, which is very different than the interests of organic farmers and organic eaters. And so the standards have changed a lot. And so I try not to overwhelm people with like how much that's changed, but my main message, especially to women, because we largely are the ones that feed our families and are raising that next generation, right? And then we have to keep ourselves strong because, you know, we are holding that position, right? Of nurturing others. And when you think about epigenetics and how important all that is, right? I mean, that's our future, is our children, right? That's truly is our future. Yeah. And so I just try to tell people to know that that organic label has changed and that we have to be more diligent. And so my main message is yes, buy organic whenever possible, but also know that we really need food grown more in harmony with nature, in biological systems. And, you know, like one thing I offer now to people is like rock minerals, you know, to grow your own, remineralize your soil and start to grow your own. And I don't think that we can grow everything we need for a year. You know, I guess we can do it if we really buckle down and do it, you know, like Barbara Kingsolver, Animal Vegetable Miracle, amazing book, well, where she did that for a year. But at least when we start to do that, we gain an understanding, you know, of how plant works, of how nature works. And then we can go to the farmers markets and we can go to our city councils and we can say, we need more local organic farmers to grow this kind of food for our nutrition. And I really believe we need to start to make those transitions personally.
So is what you're saying, just so I can summarize it. So is what you're saying, to the answer to my question, when I say, you know, why is it important that we know where our food comes from, is that you're saying that because we want to understand where the nutrition is?
Yes. Yeah. Because for me, I am always dialing down to what the root of anything is, you know, because I feel like lots of times we treat the symptoms, basically, if you will. And I'm not just talking about illness, but I mean, how many people have like sleeplessness or brain fog or achy muscles or whatever, right? It's like, we want to have quality of life.
Yeah.
So if we get to the root of it, like in our bodies, we're electromagnetic beings. So it's about looking at, you know, seeing ourselves as that. And then also like getting down to the mitochondria of the cell and nourishing ourselves deeply. And nature has that all figured out. I mean, it's really a miracle, right? That what nature mm-hmm. provides is what we need to thrive. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we're going to the grocery stores, most of us, to get our food. And in some of the research that we did through, I co-founded something called the BioNutrient Institute. We did 5 years of research on, you know, measuring nutrient levels in food and correlating with management practices. What we found is that most of the food was in the very low end of nutrition. Mm. And there was a few, it was like that bell curve and the higher ends. And so that left more questions than answers, as science does, right? It's not this absolute thing. But for me, I'm like, oh, it's food grown in biological systems, right? That could be biodynamic, that could be organic. But going to the grocery store, we found isn't largely where that food is.
You know, it's interesting. As I'm writing my book that comes out in spring of 2025, what I'm noticing as part of the research is that the United Nations, a division of the United Nations, came out and said that our soil is so deficient in nutrients that they are concerned that we're not even going to be able to grow our own food. Like it's that big of an issue that soil is so depleted of minerals and nutrients. Right. So it goes into what you're saying is that when you're showing your rock minerals, well, that's cool. I want to learn more about that for those of us who love gardening and are growing our own food and can in certain times of the year. I mean, where I live, I can maybe grow it, you know, for 2 months of the year, 2 or 3 months. But, you know, for those of you who are blessed to live in a warmer climate, you can grow your food more, right? Which is super exciting. But it's a big problem is that our food is so deficient in the minerals, which is why, as a nutritionist, for me, I'm like, absolutely, let's focus on our food and what we're eating. But, you know, in many cases, we need to supplement certain things if we're not getting that nutrition. So tell us a little bit about the, you know, let's go back to the beginning. I want to go back to, before we move on, I want to go back to the definition of organic, because you alluded to it in the beginning. You're saying things have changed. What is the real definition of organic?
Yeah. Well, First of all, the organic standards started, and I'll try not to go down a rabbit hole, but they started with the organic here in the US with the Organic Food Production Act. And that was approved in, I'm pretty sure it was 92. I'm pretty sure it was 92. It doesn't really matter, but in the 90s. And so that set up, you know, how the USDA was going to regulate organic. That was already a deviation from how people, meaning like eaters and farmers, thought of organic. My late friend, Ronnie Cummins, he, back in those days, he was saying it was like a grade B organic. And I always remembered that.
Ronnie was a well-known organic activist, and I had the pleasure of meeting him several times. I remember we used to go for dinner. You would always take me along with you. I've met him several times. So yeah, I remember him well.
Yeah. Yeah. Really remarkable man who made a huge difference in my life. I used to tell him that all the time. I got the privilege to be able to work with him, you know, on the GMO labeling campaigns, you know, in 2011, 2012, and so forth. We just lost him about a year ago, sadly. But he had a major mark in the US and worldwide, I would probably say. And, you know, he really inspired me to be able to see like the vision of what one man or a couple, of course he did this with his wife also, can make. You know, I used to think like, what if he hadn't been there to tell me that, you know? And so I, you know, through his newsletters and so forth, I used to go to the co-ops and learn more about organic. And so I look back at that, you know, I don't know, what is that now? That's 35 years, I guess. And where we are now. And so the biggest, probably the biggest blow that I can talk about to the organic standards is, as you know, something that I worked on in 2017, pretty intensely. I launched a campaign through my then organization, Next 7 Project, called Protect Organic. And I joined a lot of America's foundational organic farmers, those farmers that started organic, to stop hydroponic from being approved in organic. And the reason that we did that, because a lot of people will say, well, if we're going to have hydroponic, why not have it organic? But two things with that. One thing is that in the law, it says you have to have soil. You know, it's a system of building soil. And, or, you know, organic isn't quote, just about our food. It's also a way to steward the environment, right? And so when you're growing hydroponically, you're not, obviously not really, you're not stewarding anything. The second thing is that I did some testing of hydroponic produce a few years back, and I found that the mineral content was significantly less in hydroponic than it was in soil grown organic. This is all organic. And the third thing, I guess there's three things, is that it's not labeled. So we don't really know. And it wasn't approved. And then CCOF in California was certifying it as organic, even though they shouldn't have been. And so, you know, a lot of these things happen at these political levels and with regulations, and then also just sometimes people not being on the up and up. But what it does is it affects people like my granddaughter, you know? So when my daughter's going to the store and she's buying organic, as an example, she's doing that with faith and trust in the organic label. Right. And when that label has changed so much and it's not there, you know, to me, that's a real problem, you know, and this is a thing I don't think people know.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Cindy Bigelow of Bigelow Tea, and I'm here to introduce you to our newest line called Bigelow Benefits. I love them all. We have stress-free, and I say, who doesn't want to be stress-free? Stay well, perfect for this time of year. Calm stomach, sleep, another important one, and our newest, throat defense. So try any one of them. You can buy them on Amazon or BigelowTea.com. I guarantee you, you will love them all.
So I think, so to go back to the definition of organic, is that, so organic is food that is grown in soil without the use of pesticides, herbicides, genetic engineering, you know, irradiation, as well as the sewer sludge, right? So that would be kind of the general, was that the initial definition of organic?
Yeah, I would say grown in the soil, animal welfare standards. You know, animal there was welfare, a lot of farmers, right, that said, we, you know, of course we have to have animal welfare standards. And the sad reality is that we, you know, we don't have that. And again, that was a political move. So now we have to look for all of these add-on labels, like humanely raised, as an example, right?
So what you're saying is, that's actually a really good point. So what you're saying is that we had the definition of organic, but now because things have changed so much, there's all these extra labels that are being put on things in order to tell people.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So like in 2018, after we lost on the hydroponic, the farmers that I was working with closely in Vermont, like Dave Chapman, they said, we're going to start an add-on label and call it Real Organic. And I said, okay, I'm in, you know? And so we launched that. I was part of that, starting that project in 2018. And so now you can look for the Real Organic project label. And that those farmers feel like that reflects how they farm. And it's over 1,000 farms certified now. And mostly in the US and I think in Canada. But that's a big endeavor, you know, to be able to do that.
You know, it's for the average consumer, for those of us who are listening and, you know, even through me, I learned so much from you over the years, but it's so confusing for us because we hear the word organic, right? We hear the word, we should be eating organic versus conventional, let's call it. And we're like, we need to be eating organic food because it's so much better than conventional. And for the average person, we might think, you know, organic is more expensive. It's, you know, obviously a lot of, in a lot of cases it is. And so, you know, in some cases, depending where you buy it, I mean, prices are, you know, depending what you're buying, prices can vary. But then we think of something, we think it's more, it's healthier. We think it's the way to go. And then I hear you speaking and you're like, well, it's changed so much over the years due to, we'll go into a minute about some of those examples. But I think at the end of the day, what should we be getting as consumers? Because we want to make these healthy choices for our families, for ourselves.
Yeah.
But if it's not the same, is it still the better option? I mean, in my opinion, it would still be the better option, even though it's not the original definition as to what it was, you know, years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
It still has, or does it still have less chemicals, less fertilizers, and all those other things? Maybe the nutritional value isn't there on everything, but is it still that better option for the average person who's going to the grocery store and who wants to make those healthier or those better decisions?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. We're actually in a very strange time right now, with regards to all that, which is why, like I said, I start advocating more for local and regional. Mm-hmm. And of course that takes time and that's a transition. I live in Boulder County. And so I'm really lucky, you know, Boulder County in Colorado, we have an abundance of organic, regenerative, biodynamic farmers here. And you can talk to them and, you know, you can go to their farm and you can also just feel the vitality in the produce. You know, it's remarkable. It's a big difference in what you get at the grocery store for the most part.
Right.
So here, that's what I do is I go to local, regional, biodynamic, organic, regenerative farmers, as much as I can throughout the year. I've taught myself how to do some preservation so that I can preserve those vegetables to eat them longer throughout the year. Of course, I do go to the grocery store. And I will look for, if I buy anything that's processed, I look for the less ingredients as possible. I'm moving more and more and more away from processed. I buy 100% grass-fed. Usually I buy bison. I buy local eggs. I look for the humanely raised, and I buy A2 milk, you know, when I buy milk, because that's digestible by humans. And those are some really simple things. You know, they always say shop around the aisles, you know, on the outside.
Michael
of the Pollan. Store.
Yeah. Shopping.
Yeah, exactly.
The store.
It's about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's still true, but we did find that the nutrient levels were a lot lower in grocery store food. So I say, you know, especially if you're feeding little ones, you know, look for organic. Megan Rowe at White Leaf, that's just a little note. I'm really, really grateful for what she does. She has biodynamic baby foods. So if you have a baby out there or a grandchild out there, this is from menopause, you know, look for White Leaf. You know, that's
it's a brand. White Leaf is a brand.
White Leaf is a brand, and she sources most of her produce from Europe because they have stricter standards over there. You know,
is that where do you get that? That's online. Like, how would people find
it? It's pretty much everywhere.
Okay. White Leaf. Okay, we'll put a link to it below.
Whole Foods and natural grocers and things like that. Mm-hmm. So Demeter certified biodynamic is amazing. It's an international certification, so it has more strident standards to it. And we found higher nutrient levels correlated with biodynamic farming, you know? So that's another thing.
So you mentioned quite a few options. So number one is grow your own when you can, if you can. And when you're growing it, using things that remineralize the soil. So that would be number one. Number two, farmers market, local farmers markets, getting to know your farmer. I know that's something you speak about a lot. How they're growing their food and how they're processing it, or if they're processing or what they're, how they're bringing it to that farmer's market. So for you to buy it, and then looking for other certifications like biodynamic, regenerative, all of those. So can you explain the difference between, or, and really, you know, just in simple terms, what does regenerative agriculture mean? What does biodynamic mean? You know, so that way we can understand, because again, it becomes overwhelming. Truly, it becomes overwhelming as to, but we want to make those healthier choices, right? We're doing the best, you know, for many of us, we're doing the best we can. And we need to keep budget in mind because it's an issue. You know, what's going on in the world right now, it becomes an issue. So how are we making those choices?
Right. Yeah. No, it's a great question. And, I've had some shifts too. So I found myself on a budget, but I've always prioritized food. Even when I was a single young mom, I went out without a lot of stuff and, food was what I invested in. So I always encourage people to make that their priority, no matter the cost, and give up other things if you can. But that's just a side note. Because it really is an investment, in your health. But really quickly, regenerative in the regenerative organic community is it's a really hot button topic. It's actually in these farming communities, it's a challenge right now, I'll just say. And so, but as a consumer, there is a regenerative organic label, ROC, ROC, that was put forward by Patagonia, Rodale, and Bronner's specifically. That's a strong label. Like I said, the Real Organic Project is a very strong label. Regenerative does not have any kind of definition like organic does. So, anybody, if you will, can use regenerative. So I tell people to be mindful of that if it just says regenerative.
And when you say there's no definition, you mean definition put forth by the government?
There's no legal definition. Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, like an organic farmer would have a definition. Regeneration is a law of the universe. And this is what I try to remind people, is because we kind of get very, we can get very, what's the, blindsided a little bit, have blinders on is what I want to say with labels, and we get too dependent on labels. And what I'm saying is that we have to kind of become more dependent again upon our own internal systems. Like we have our nose and our tongues, that can detect good food. We have these in our body. And so if something doesn't have flavor, or if it doesn't have a pleasing aroma or any aroma, it probably doesn't have the nutrients there. When something is nutrients has that nutrient integrity, I'll say, it produces something called secondary metabolites. Secondary metabolites are where the flavor and the aroma is. Okay. So like, as I do formulations with essential oils, with plant essences, and that's all that those are, is those are secondary metabolites. And we can smell them when we take them into our body. And they actually intermingle with our cells and they help us to heal, on all different levels of our body. So secondary metabolites are, I think that, they're closely correlated with phytonutrients. Okay. And there's a lot of research that's going on right now about that, like with Dr. Stefan van Vliet that I've worked with. And so basically I'm saying it's we have this capacity to know, okay. And so to move, quote, beyond labels. And to rely
I
upon
love
our
that.
own inner systems, right? And so if it tastes bitter and it's not supposed to be bitter, or if it has no aromatics, or if it just doesn't feel like it has that integrity to you with your own kind of knowing, it probably doesn't, and there's something better for you. Because when you experience that from an amazing grower, or you do something like with the biological system that I have for garden kits, and you do that in your own garden, there's no difference. I mean, or excuse me, there's no difference. There's a huge difference, is what I really wanted to say. There's no comparison, is what I wanted to say, is that between like your soil grown tomato and that remineralized inoculated soil, and like a hydroponic tomato from the store. I mean, there's no comparison, right?
You'll often hear people when they, I'll compare it to a steak with meat because you can really tell it with meat. You'll often hear people say if they have, let's say grass-fed meat, they'll be like, wow, this has so much flavor, and you can really taste it versus conventional meat where you may not taste it the same way. And I've heard that, I mean, I've been in this industry almost 25 years. I have heard that over and over between family, friends, people that we've spoken to. So I want you to repeat this, Lisa. And I think this is an important point when you were talking about making food a priority, because as a single mom, you didn't have much income coming in for many years of your life. And I think that it's important to stress that because again, I'm gonna mention the inflation and the cost of goods and the cost of like just food these days have risen so much that how can people put that into an action plan? And I think that's the important part.
Well, here's the thing is that If you become like kind of like a scientist, let's say, of your life, and you get really curious and you observe. So like when I go to the store, I will observe like the cost of like a bag of like a snack. And it can be like $5, $6, $7 or whatever, especially if it's organic. But of course, you can't really find organic snacks anywhere, I've noticed, which is another thing. But even in like Whole Foods or whatever. But let's just say that you look at those snacks, right? And you can say to yourself, like, how much nutrition am I actually getting from that? Versus like, if I'm going to buy, I don't know, two bunches of kale, which you can get for $5 organic, right? Or even one, let's just say you even get one. And if you become like, that curator, my new platform is called Apothecurian, and I made up that word. But for me, it's about making everything around you your apothecary, making your life your apothecary.
I mean, that's
Or,
awesome.
thank you. You're because I do like a lot of homeopathy and flower essences and essential oils and supplements and things like this. So that's what we think of as an apothecary. But I think if we make our life, become the curator of our life, of everything around us being medicine for us, right? That's nature, that's gardening, that's the food we eat, right? And when we have pleasure from food, it's largely because it has nutrition in it, right? And so when we're talking about, like you're saying, about having that experience with like 100% grass-fed, pasture-raised animal, and then we offer that gratitude to that animal, it really does become a blessing to our body, and it becomes bioavailable, and we accept that nutrition, right? And it energizes us. So that's what animals do for us. They convert that sun energy for us, and then we can eat it. Plants do that too, right? And so, in the grocery store, it is a challenge, but if that's what you've got, that's what you've got. And I completely get that. I grew up in a food desert, right? And so, just feel into the leaves, right? Of the if they feel vibrant, take those in and figure out how to do with those. I mean, if you just get a little bit of education with cooking, it's remarkable what you can produce. It really is, with simple vegetables, as you know, and just some basic skills. And then you're not spending as much either, actually. And people, I think it's just this propaganda that's been put out, right, by the industry. To say that organic is more expensive. And it might be a little bit, with your vegetables, but now I find it's not so much, especially if you go to a farm stand, because you're eliminating that middleman. Most of our food dollar goes to retailers and distributors and processors. So if you go straight to the farm or farm stand, a farmer's market, you're not paying as much because they don't have that middleman. You're going direct to the farmer.
And in many cases, I remember years ago, if you're able to find this, we found a farmer who sold us a half a cow. And then we would take it and then we would keep it in our freezer and then we would eat it all year round. So if you're able to find a farmer who could do that and get your meat directly from farmers, it's amazing. I mean, the food tastes delicious, but again, you're getting it for hopefully a better price, and you're also stocking up for when you can't purchase it, let's say, other
100%.
times of the years, right? Other times of the
Yes.
year. So it makes it harder. Can you explain what a food desert is?
A food desert is when I think there is actually a definition for like a radius, but when you don't have people can use the terms like clean or organic
Access.
or nutrient dense or whatever. When you don't have access to food that would be considered nutritional for you. However, with the BioNutrient Institute, they did a food desert study, and they found that actually the nutrient quality, the nutrient levels in organic produce, like in a bodega, because now like you could have a food desert in an urban setting in a neighborhood like in New York City or LA or whatever. I grew up in Iowa, which ironically was a food desert, right? Because all this beautiful soil and farmland, but it was mostly genetically engineered crops. I just didn't have access to that. So that would be a food desert when you don't have access to real food, right? It's mostly processed
Ultra processed foods.
or food that's sprayed with pesticides and chemicals and things like that.
Tell us a little bit about your role at Food Democracy Now. And you alluded to before, you said the GMO labeling. Can you talk a little bit about that? And why does it, like, what is GMOs? Why does it matter? Is there research on it? I mean, you hear a lot of people will be like, oh, it's not even, they don't even pay attention to it. It doesn't matter. And I know that you had major influence when it came to genetically engineered crops. And I know that I really want you to tell the story about how you took a very large corporation to court, and you, like, you're a freaking rock star. Like, and that's what I want to get across. Like, Lisa, and I wanted Lisa on because, as in, you know, for me, empowering women in this phase of life is so important, right? And when we have someone like Lisa on the show, you could talk, I want you to talk about some incredible things that you have done in your career and share the, you know, the successes, the hardships of what you went through to really try to change the food system so it's better for all of us. Like, this isn't what you, I mean, you were doing it for yourself and your family, but at the same time, you were doing it to change it for all of America. So I want you to talk a little bit about that.
The first thing I ever did, I'll say this, this is coming to my mind, so I'll share this. So, like I said, I lived in Iowa, and back in 2005, it was actually Ronnie's organization, Organic Consumers Association, that put out an alert saying in Iowa right now, there's a bill in the state house to take away local control of seed. And a lot of people might go, you know, what does that even mean? A lot of people don't know what local control is, but it's so vital. What that means is that in your own community, in your own county, in your own state, but mostly it means like more at the county level or city level, town level, you can say, this is how we want to grow food. And so what happened in California, there were people in counties that said, we don't want to have genetically engineered crops grown in our county because genetically engineered crops, they cross-pollinate. And so now our organic, you know, corn or alfalfa or whatever, as an example, can now be contaminated. And now that seed has genetic, you know, material that's resistant to glyphosate, as an example. And so these large companies, like primarily Monsanto, that company that you mentioned that I was in a lawsuit against in 2011 on behalf of organic farmers trying to
Incredible.
protect their seed. Yeah, we ran the like the communications and the campaigning for that, but it ultimately represented about maybe 2 million people, I think, is what it actually represented. But the first thing I ever did was like, we need to have local control of our seed. And so if my county that I lived as an example in Iowa wanted to say, we don't want to grow any genetically engineered crops here. We want to maintain the integrity of the seed here. We need to be able to do that.
I remember learning all that from Jeffrey Smith. So Jeffrey Smith is the founder of something called IRT, or Institute of Responsible Technology, and he was very big on the non-GMO front. Okay, so what I want to do go from here, Lisa, is I just want you to explain, if we want to grow our own food, because we're coming to the end of the interview, explain how we should grow our own food and then how to add the minerals back in, because that rock, those rock minerals look really cool, and where can we get it?
Yeah, my website is apothecarian.com, and we'll have the garden kits that are available for you. It's a perfect time to get it, you know, in April and May, and then you can also do a reapplication in the fall of the minerals. I always recommend that for people too. So, and
Before, you know, before it gets cold for some people, but, or do you do it twice? So even before, for myself, it snows where I am. So do you do a reapplication just to, so it's there for the next spring kind of thing, or
we
it
do
won't?
a reapplication in the fall of the minerals. Yeah.
Interesting. This has been really, thank you. This has been very eye-opening. And I mean, obviously, I feel like I've grown up with you in a lot of it over the years, and I've been
Thank
in like the meetings that I used to be in with you and all these
you.
incredible people that have made such a difference in the world. I used to say I would like love being that fly on the wall, and I was so blessed that you always included me. So I'm so grateful to you, because I really didn't know a lot before I, you know, met you and sat in a lot of these meetings when it came to our food, like when it comes to our food and how it's grown and why should we care and all of that stuff. So thank you for everything that you've done. Thank you for being such a rock star and trying to make everything food healthier for us in general. And I think, you know, we need to be grateful for that. We need to be grateful for that, because our food needs some help. Our food system needs help. And But I don't want it to be like this overwhelming thing of, oh my gosh, there's so much that we need to do. We can't do anything, which is why I'm happy that you kind of you honed in on some certain things that we could do, that we can do that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thanks for sussing that out. You always kind of reorient my rudder. So you've taught me just as much, Andrea. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, honey. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Lisa. And I'm so happy that we got into lobbying as well as government policy, because it's important that we understand where our food comes from. And Lisa is really one of the original pioneers when it comes to helping us to get better food and understand the food that we're eating. So thank you, Lisa. And if you enjoyed the interview as much as I did, please share it, because the more you share shows you care. And please leave a review. I really would appreciate you taking a minute to do so, because first of all, I love hearing what you have to say, but also it helps other people help to find our podcast, Menopause Reimagined. Thank you for spending the last hour and a bit with me. I appreciate you, and I'll see you at the next interview.